A 40-year-old man with a telephone receiver stenciled on his sweater, with the words under it, "Dial me," said, "He's not here." Fletch waited a moment before moving on. At another campfire, Filtertip said he thought Gummy had gone home, to his parents' house. Jagger said he thought Gummy had been picked up by the police again. When Fletch stood up from the campfire, he found Vatsyayana standing behind. Vatsyayana walked a few paces with him toward the seawall.
"Why are you looking for Gummy?"
"Bobby gave me a message for him."
"Where's Bobby?"
"She's split."
"Where's Bobby?"
"Gonzo, bye-bye."
"Where?"
"With a knapsack I gave her, full of protein tablets and Ritz crackers I ripped off from a Seventh-day Adventist supermarket." Vatsyayana stopped.
"I said, where's Bobby?"
"Look, she got her supply up yesterday, didn't she?"
"Yeah."
"So she split." Vatsyayana was giving him the hard stare through the moonlight. His eyes remained kind.
"Why are you looking for Gummy?"
"I told you, Bobby gave me a message for him."
"What's the message?"
"It's for Gummy."
"Tell me."
Fletch said, "Hang loose, Fat Sam." He followed his moon shadow up the beach. On that cool night, trying to sleep on his ground mat, Fletch missed his sleeping bag. He missed Bobby. Together they would have been warm in the sleeping bag. Chapter 20. Fletch heard the heavy footsteps on the stairs. They were in no hurry. They came along the short landing to his door and stopped. The door swung open slowly. Two policemen looked through the door. Fletch sat up. "Good morning," the first policeman said. They both looked showered, shaved, and full of coffee. "What day is it?" Fletch asked.
"Tuesday."
The second policeman was looking for a place to sit down. In his eyes, going over the room, was comparable pride in his own home, his own furniture.
"Get ready to come with us."
"Why?"
"The chief wants to see you, questioning."
Fletch was looking at his bare feet on their sides, on the ground mat.
"I guess I'm ready."
"You don't even want to take a leak?"
Fletch said, "Why should I take a leak when I'm going to the police station anyway?"
It was about 6:45 in the morning. One of the policemen held open the back door of the patrol car for Fletch and closed it after he'd gotten in. A heavy wire grill ran between the front seat and the back seat. The back seat was broken down. It smelled of vomit. Dried blood was on the seat and the floor. Fletch said, "This is a very poor environment back here. I want you to know that."
"It's nice up here," said the policeman in the passenger seat.
The driver said, "How's your head?"
Fletch had forgotten.
"This is the first time it hasn't hurt. You two aren't the two I belted on the beach the other night, are you?"
"No," said the driver, "I'm the one who belted you."
Fletch said, "You do nice work."
"It's a pleasure."
"How come you guys didn't arrest me the other night?"
"The chief said not to," said the driver. "He was feeling mellow."
"He feels mellow every time he comes back from his retirement home in Mexico. He counts a grapefruit or something. Makes him feel mellow."
"He's retiring soon?"
"Next year sometime,"
Fletch said. "I was hoping he'd retire before I got to the station."
They turned on to Main. It was difficult talking through a grill to the backs of heads. Fletch wanted to open the window, but the window jack handles had been removed. The police were probably afraid someone would try to commit suicide by bopping himself on the nose with one. The smell was beginning to make Fletch feel sick. He repeated, "This is a very poor environment back here." From his appearance, Chief of Police Graham Cummings could not have been anything else. Short-cropped iron-gray hair, a jawline like a shovel scoop, broad, massive shoulders, steady brown eyes. A man of his appearance in any town would almost automatically be given the job of police chief.
"What's your name?"
"Fletch."
What's your full name? Fletch, Fletch, Fletch.
Alone in the chief's bare utilitarian office, they sat on either side of a gray aluminum desk.
By any chance, could Fletch be short for Fletcher?
It could be.
Is Fletcher your first name or your last?
My first name.
What's your last name?
Smith.
Fletcher Smith, the chief said. Seems I've heard that name somewhere before.
Fletcher Smith?
No, just Smith. Where do you live, Smith?
I forget the address where your goons picked me up this morning.
You live there?
Weekends I spend in Hawaii.
Do you live alone?
Except for a pet roach.
And what do you do for a living, Mr. Smith?
I'm a shoeshine boy.
There was no shoeshine equipment in your room.
It must have been ripped off during the night. I'll file a complaint before I leave.
The chief said, There seems to be a certain lack of coordination between yourself and your office, Mr. Fletcher.
I beg your pardon?
Your superiors at the News Tribune called here yesterday. Your editor, a Mrs. Snow. Do I have that right, a Clara Snow? Shit. She informed me you are doing an investigation for your newspaper of drugs on the beach, and she asked that we keep an eye out for you. She said she thought you might be getting close to something. If you asked for police protection, we were to understand who you are and to give it. Shit. You are I Am Fletcher of the News Tribune.
You've got the wrong I Am Fletcher.
Are you getting close to something, Mr. Fletcher?
No.
Well, Mr. Fletcher. Fuck.
The chief did not relax. He remained, forearms on the desk, looking directly at Fletch.
Mr. Fletcher, it seems you've forgotten certain things. There is a certain little rule, shall we call it, which says that you are supposed to identify yourself as a journalist immediately to any officer of the law with whom you find yourself in conversation, even casual conversation. Had you forgotten that rule?
It slipped my mind.
We have you on a violation of that rule, Mr. Smith.
Entrapment.
Second, we know that you've been living here at the beach with a young girl named Bobby.
I have.
Where is Bobby?
She split.
Where did Bobby go?
I don't know, home maybe.
I sincerely doubt that. Addicts seldom stray far from their source.
She got a bit ahead, enough to trip on.
When did she leave?
Sunday night.
By what method of transportation?
She flew.
Then there is the fact that we found stashed in your room quantities of both marijuana and heroin.
Did you have a search warrant?
We weren't searching. We just happened to find the stuff concealed in the stove.
I was hiding it from Bobby.
You are guilty of possession of hard drugs.
I made the purchases as evidence.
From whom did you buy it?
Fat Sam.
Then why was the marijuana in city police laboratory bags?
Who knows Fat Sam's source?
Why would you need to make a purchase of marijuana anyway? One purchase of heroin would be sufficient evidence.
I like to write a balanced story.
That story you wrote last fall about the police association wasn't very balanced.
What?
I remember the story, and the byline, I Am Fletcher. You said the police association was nothing but a drinking club.
Oh.
You made very little of the fact that we have seminars when we meet on police techniques, that we raise money for the police academy, that last year we donated an ambulance to Ornego, California.
Thanks for reading me.
Do you get my point, Mr. Fletcher?
I'm getting it.
I want you out of town immediately.
Some police protection.
You may have some excuses for the matters I've already mentioned, including the possession of heroin, but I have on my staff three police officers who can attest to having been struck by you while in the course of their duty last Sunday night.
You didn't arrest me then.
We were trying to subdue another prisoner.
It took seven of you to subdue a 17-year-old junkie?
Due to your intercession, three of the seven were wounded.
Why didn't you arrest me the other night?
Did you want to be arrested, Mr. Fletcher?
Golly gee, no, Chief.
Mr. Fletcher, I'm going to give you two orders, and you're going to obey both. The first is that any evidence you have regarding drugs on the beach you turn over to us. Do you have any evidence at all?
No.
None? Just Fat Sam.
You really aren't very good at your work, are you?
I get a lot of help from the office. The second order is that you get out of town before noon and not come back, ever. Is that clear?
What are you afraid of?
We're not afraid of you.
Seems like it.
We are conducting our own investigation of the drugs on the beach, Mr. Fletcher. This is police work. These investigations have been ongoing for some time.
2 or 3 years.
We're looking for a break sometime in the next few months. This is a difficult, complicated business. A private investigation, even by your newspaper, could ruin all our work to date. I think I've made myself clear. Get out of town, or we'll run you through a course that will begin immediately with jail, and will end with your suffering a very long and very expensive legal battle. Possession of heroin and assault upon 3 separate officers while in performance of their duties should be enough to convince you.
I'm convinced.
You will leave town immediately?
Never to darken your dungeon again.
Chapter 21. It was 8:45, and the sidewalks were as full as they ever got in the business district of the beach. Traffic on Main Street was bumper to bumper. 1.5 blocks from the police station, an approaching gray Jaguar XKE slid against the curb. License number 440001. The car Fletch was to steal after murdering Alan Stanwyck in 60 hours. The horn honked. Fletch got into the front seat. Stanwyck moved the car back into the line of traffic.
What were you doing at the police station?
Being questioned.
About what?
A kid I know disappeared, a girl named Bobby.
Are you involved in her disappearance?
No, but I sure want to get out of town soon. How did you know I was at the police station?
I asked at the beer stand, which was open at 8:00 in the morning. Some life you lead. A kid with jug ears said he saw you this morning in the back of a patrol car.
French fries are good for breakfast.
Alan Stanwyck lit a cigarette without using the dashboard lighter. He used a gold lighter from his pocket. He was wearing sunglasses.
Fletch said, "What do you want?"
"To see how everything's going. Do you have your passport?"
"I should have it tomorrow."
"And the gloves?"
"I'll get a pair."
"You have applied for the passport."
"Oh, yes, I even had my picture taken."
"Fine.
Are you clear in your mind about what you're going to do?"
"Perfectly."
"You still want it done?"
Stanwyck blew out a stream of smoke.
"Yes." "Are you sure you're dying of cancer?"
"Yes, why do you ask?"
"You look fine."
"It takes a while for it to show. I want to be gone by then."
They were sitting at a red light.
"I remember reading that you fly airplanes," Fletch said.
"Test airplanes, whatever you call them."
"What about it?"
The car crossed the intersection.
"So why don't you kill yourself in an airplane?"
The shoulders of Stanwyck's suit jacket moved more than another man's would when he shrugged. He had powerful shoulders.
"Call it pride, if you like. If you spend your life trying to keep airplanes in the air, it's sort of difficult to aim one for the ground."
"An expensive pride."
"People have spent more than $50,000 on pride before."
"I guess so. You remember where the house is?"
"At the end of Berman Street."
"That's right. And how are you going to get there?"
"I'm going to take a taxi to the corner of Hawthorne and Main and walk from there. It's a different district, but only about 2 miles away.
"Good for you. And you remember the flight number?"
"No, you never gave it to me."
Stanwyck was looking at him through the sunglasses.
"It's the 11:00 TWA flight to Buenos Aires."
"I know that," Fletch said, "but I don't know the number."
Stanwyck said, "Neither do I."
He glided the car against the curb.
"I don't believe you and I should know each other too well," he said.
"I'm trying not to know you.
What I mean is, I think you should forget what you read about me in the newspapers."
Fletch said, "I just happened to remember that."
"Forget it. I'll let you off here."
"We're on the other side of town. I was going in the other direction."
You can hitchhike back.
Thanks a lot.
Stanwyck said, see you Thursday night. Chapter 22. Fletch rang the bell of 15641B Putnam Street and looked back the few feet to where his MG was parked at the curb. Through sunglasses, the green of the car seemed the same as the green of the lawn. An elfin voice said,
yes, who is it?
Fletch bent and shouted into the mouthpiece, Green Brothers Management, Miss Faulkner.
Just a minute.
Fletch smoothed his tie beneath his buttoned suit jacket. Sandra Faulkner's face was not particularly friendly when she opened the door. She was wearing black slacks and a loose blouse. Her hair was bleached blonde and tousled. Fletch was astonished. Sandra Faulkner was nowhere near as attractive as Joan Collins Stanwyck. She must be better in bed. I'm from Green Brothers Management, he said sternly. She said nothing. She was looking at him as if he were a piece of month-old fish. The people who manage these apartments.
So what do you want?
We want to talk with you.
Do you have some identification?
If I were you, miss, I would not take this opportunity to be insolent.
What?
We've had complaints from the neighbors about you, and we're here to discuss the possibility of evicting you on morals charges.
You must be kidding.
We're not kidding at all. Now, if you wish to continue standing here on the doorstep talking about it, it's all right with me. If you prefer to go inside, out of earshot of your neighbors, we can. She drew back, leaving the door open. He entered and closed the door.
What in God's name are you talking about?
You know perfectly well what I'm talking about, he said. Are you alone now?
Jesus Christ!
He stalked into the living room, which was furnished in what once had been termed Danish modern. The use of foul and abusive language will do nothing to further your defense.
Defense? What defense?
He pushed open the door of the bathroom, which struck him as peculiarly empty. In the bedroom was a king-size bed, with a mirror suspended from the ceiling over it. The bed was made at 10:30, with a red silk coverlet smoothed over it. On a sideboard in the kitchen was a used bottle of vermouth, a half-empty bottle of vodka, and an empty bottle of California Chablis.
What in Christ's name are you talking about? Sandra Faulkner asked.
What's that suspended from the ceiling of the bedroom?
It's a mirror. What the hell business is it of yours what it is?
Miss Faulkner, your lease precisely prohibits hanging anything from the ceiling of this apartment.
Jesus!
Nowhere in the apartment were there signs of anyone packing. Fletch sat on a living room chair. He took a notebook and pen out of his pocket. Is your real name Sandra Faulkner?
Oh, yes, of course. What's this all about, anyway?
Miss Faulkner, you live in a residential community. There are young families who live in these apartments around you, families with young children.
I know, so what?
It has become clear to some of the mothers, and I might add some of the fathers, that you have no visible means of support.
Jesus!
You haven't worked in some time.
Why is that anybody's business?
There is a question of whether your hanging around all the time is good for the moral fiber of the community's young.
Wow! Who'd believe this?
Second, it is quite clear what your means of support are. You keep this apartment solely by your means to sexually entertain.
My God, you're something from the last century!
Green Brothers Management is responsible for these apartments, Miss Faulkner, and responsible to some extent for what goes on inside them. At least we must be responsive to complaints.
You can just get the hell out of here,
Fletch said. How long have you known Alan Stanwyck? Her face changed from fury to suppressed horror mingled with sickness. Sit down, Miss Faulkner. She did, on the edge of the divan.
How do you know about Alan?
Neighbors recognized him, his picture is frequently in the newspapers, after all.
Jesus, leave Alan out of this.
He is paying for this apartment and your support, isn't he?
Yes.
All right, then. You're keeping this apartment through illicit means. You'd better tell us everything.
Why?
Miss Faulkner, would you like to see Alan Stanwyck named in an eviction action? An eviction action taken on moral grounds?
Oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. Who complained?
It is our policy not to report that sort of thing.
Make the world safe for informers, huh? We're very grateful to people who tell us when things are amiss among our apartments. How else would we know? Now, I suggest that you take our attempt to grant you a fair hearing sincerely and tell us all. Sandra Faulkner was looking at Fletch as a lady-in-waiting caught rolling in the hay with a court violinist might have looked at Queen Victoria. "Do you always wear your sunglasses in the house?" she asked. "I have a failing in the eyes," Fletch said, "which is not a subject for general conversation." "I see. Wow. Okay. What do you want to know? I used to work as a receptionist at Collins Aviation. Alan Stanwyck is sort of important at Collins Aviation."
"We know, Miss Faulkner."
"I'm not Miss Faulkner. I'm Mrs. Faulkner. My husband was a test pilot for the Navy. One day, trying to land on an aircraft carrier, he missed and crashed. I couldn't work for a long time thereafter. Jack and I had put off having children, thinking there would be plenty of time."
"This person you referred to as Jack was your husband?"
"My husband. The insurance ran out. Unemployment ran out. I was drinking heavily, very heavily. At first, Alan Stanwyck's office would make a call to see how I was doing. It was just professional courtesy, I think. One morning, very early, I was drunk out of my mind, and I told the secretary to go fuck herself. The next day, Alan Stanwyck showed up at the door with his secretary and some flowers. This was more than a year after Jack had died. They put me in a hospital for a while, and paid for it. Alan is a flyer himself. He was overseas. He has a scar on his belly from where he was wounded. The day I was released, Alan picked me up in his car and brought me home. It's been that way ever since."
"You see him twice a week?"
"Yes, about that. He's given me something to live for. Himself. I hope someday to have his child."
"He comes here on Mondays and Wednesdays?"
"The neighbors don't miss much, do they? The sons of bitches."
"Mrs. Faulkner, do you have any intention of ever marrying Mr. Stanwyck?"
"Why, no. He's married. Joan Collins. He couldn't divorce her. She's the daughter of the chairman of the board or something. John Collins."
"You've never thought of marrying him?"
"No, we've never discussed it."
"Yet you hope to have his child?"
"Yes, there's nothing wrong with that."
"Are you currently pregnant?"
"No." "In other words, Mrs. Faulkner, you intend to maintain this affair unchanged in this apartment for the foreseeable future?" "Yes, I do."
"And Mr. Stanwyck has not indicated to you any desire for change?"
"What do you mean?"
"Well, it hardly needs pointing out, Mrs. Faulkner, you have no rights here. Alan Stanwyck could disappear next week and you wouldn't have a leg to stand on."
"Fine, if that's what he wants to do. He owes me nothing. I could get a job now. I'm fine."
"Is Mr. Stanwyck in good health?"
"Yes, terrific. I wish I hadn't let myself go so long."
"And has he indicated any change in your relationship in the foreseeable future?"
"What do you mean?"
"Has he indicated to you that you might be taking a trip together?"
"No, I think I'm kept pretty much in the background, and I've never asked for such a thing."
Fletch closed his notebook. He had written nothing in it. "Very well, Mrs. Faulkner. I'll make my report to Green Brothers. I will ask them not to take any action on this matter, as it seems to be a discreet adult affair."
"Thank you."
"There aren't any other men who use this facility, are there?"
"By this facility, do you mean this apartment or me?"
"The answer is no to both." "I see." Fletch stood up. "Thank you very much, Mrs. Faulkner." She said,
"You have a lousy management company."
"What did you say?"
"I said you have a lousy management company. Not only are you nosy parkers, but these apartments are not adequately protected against burglary."
"Why do you say that?"
"I was robbed last night."
"You were?"
"Yes, all my cosmetics."
"Your cosmetics?"
"All of them."
"What on earth are you talking about?"
"Come, I'll show you."
In the bathroom, she opened the medicine chest.
"This morning, that window was open, and all my cosmetics were missing."
The medicine chest was bare, as were other shelves in the bathroom. "Only your cosmetics were missing?"
"Some aspirin, my toothpaste."
"Your towels are here."
"No, one towel is missing."
"One towel is missing. They must have used it to carry off the cosmetics."
"That's what I figure."
"Surely, Mrs. Faulkner, that window is not large enough for an adult."
"I wouldn't think so."
"Some child in the neighborhood must have broken in and stolen your cosmetics."
"I would say so."
"Probably afraid to venture farther into the apartment."
I'm glad you're so busy protecting the morals of the children in this neighborhood, Mr. Whatever-Your-Name-Is Green Brothers Management. I'd hate to have them thinking dirty thoughts while they're in jail for burglary.
Chapter 23. It was lunchtime. The corridors of the News Tribune were cool and empty. Fletch dropped two wrapped sandwiches and a carton of milk on his desk and took off his suit jacket. He picked up the phone and dialed the number of the managing editor.
This is Fletcher. I want to talk to Frank.
Are you in the office, Fletch?
Yes.
He's at lunch. He'll be back at 2 o'clock. Can you wait till then?
I'll twiddle my thumbs. Please make sure I see him at 2.
Fletch loosened his tie and sat down. While eating the sandwiches, he found the subpoena. Ordered to appear in court Friday morning at 10 o'clock. Failure to pay alimony to Barbara Ralton Fletcher. Contempt of court. Failure to appear will cause instant arrest.
Jesus Christ.
Friday morning, he had the choice of receiving a Bronze Star and thus being arrested, or facing contempt charges in court and thus being fired.
Jesus Christ.
The phone rang.
Hello, for Christ's sake.
Is this Mr. Fletcher?
If you insist.
What? Who is this?
This is Mr. Gillette of Gillette, Worsham, and O'Brien.
Jesus Christ.
Mr. Fletcher, I regret to tell you that the check you gave me the other day as payment of back and present alimony to Mrs. Linda Fletcher in the amount of $3,429 is no good.
You bastard, I asked you not to cash it for 10 days.
I didn't try to cash it, Mr. Fletcher. However, I did take the precaution of making an inquiry at the bank. You don't even have an account in that bank, Mr. Fletcher.
What?
You do not now. You never have had an account in the Merchants Bank. Not a checking account, not a savings account, nothing.
Nice of you to tell me.
Where did you get that check, Mr. Fletcher?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. I was clearing my throat.
It doesn't matter.
What does matter is that I warned you when we met in your office last Friday that if you didn't play straight with us from now on, I would lower the boom on you. I would bring you back to court. You have provided me with ample opportunity for doing precisely that.
Mr. Gillette, you listen to me. This morning I've gone into court and seen to it that contempt charges are filed against you. A subpoena ordering you to appear in court Friday morning at 10 o'clock will arrive within 10 minutes.
No.
What do you mean, no?
I can't be there Friday morning.
Why not?
I've already been subpoenaed to appear in court Friday morning at 10 o'clock to answer contempt charges for not paying alimony to my first wife, Barbara.
Mr. Fletcher, I can't care about that.
Well, I can't be in two places at the same time.
At least we know Friday morning you will not be before a justice of the peace getting married again.
Anyway, Friday morning at 10 o'clock, I'm also supposed to be in the Marine Commandant's office receiving a Bronze Star.
Really, Mr. Fletcher, I've had enough of your stories.
It's true. If I don't pick up the damn Bronze Star, I'll get fired. Then where will all my wives be?
They'll still be in court, Mr. Fletcher, hopefully represented by able attorneys.
Jesus.
What's more, Mr. Fletcher, in further implementation of my threat to lower the boom on you, this morning I also filed criminal charges against you for fraud.
Fraud?
Fraud, Mr. Fletcher. It is against the law, Mr. Fletcher, to present checks against bank accounts that don't exist.